Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Justin Chekai, who's serving as our worship associate, our interim director of religious education, Karen Labracco, our music director, Hal Walker, and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Peace Choir and Children's Choir, the Golden Tones. So we're glad to be together today.
Call to worship this morning comes from Daniel Cantor. To love life. To love life is to notice the wonders that abound. And to notice the wonders that abound is to be grounded in the here and now. And to be grounded in the here and now is the beginning of finding love for this life today. Let us ground ourselves in this instant, in this worship of all things good and right.
To lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer, I chose this poem for you, which is by a minister named Jan Richardson. She's a Methodist minister, and she has a particular gift of helping people prepare for Advent. And this is her poem called, "Blessed Are You Who Bear the Light." I chose it for you because we are here as people who endeavor to bear the light. And even if we're not in a place to do that right now, we have been people in the past who bore the light for others and aspire to be the light in the future. Blessing for you who bear the light. Blessed are you who bear the light in unbearable times, who testify to its endurance amid the unendurable, who bear witness to its persistence when everything seems in shadow and in grief. Blessed are you in whom the light lives, in whom the brightness blazes, your heart a chapel, an altar where in the deepest night can be seen the fire that shines forth in you in unaccountable faith, in stubborn hope, in love that illumines every broken thing it finds. Surrounded by the sounds of our community, we'll keep silence for a few moments together. Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. How can we widen our ministry far enough to reach out and embrace this world of ours, which is so troubled, it seems, so much suffering. We come today with broken hearts yet again. And I thought about how we can enact a prayer and not just speak it. So this is my prayer. I wrote a postcard to both of our senators and our representative. I wrote, "Our country can and must do more to prevent gun violence. Our hearts have been broken by senseless tragedies too many times. No person in the United States should have to fear being the target of a mass shooting. There's no reason any civilian needs to own a military-style assault weapon. We need stronger gun laws, and the time for change is long overdue. We need your leadership. Please work with your colleagues on legislation to prevent gun violence. We can't wait any longer." It's a little thing. This is an embodiment of my prayer. I thought about giving these to you. I have many. They're on the table outside the sanctuary doors, in case this is an expression of your prayer too, but maybe it's not. Maybe you have your own way of embodying a prayer for our country, which desperately needs it. So if this speaks for you, if this can be a prayer of your own heart, please stop before you leave today and take three of these and write your return address on the back, and there's room to add your own note and sign your name and leave it here, and we'll mail it for you. And if your prayer is different, I invite you to find a way to embody it this week. Will you join me in the spirit of prayer? The spirit, the spark, the source of life is holy. Every day it's desecrated somewhere around the world. Let us not be consigned, resigned to helplessness. Oh, spark of light, burn, shine in us that we may be bearers of the light, that we may be people who testify to the power, the blessing, and the beauty which this life has afforded us. Let us be bearers of the light so that we can help shine the path to a better way. Amen.
The Chekai family is a small family. When we gather for holidays, there will be at most 12 to 14 of us, which now includes my two children. Our Christmas Eve tradition consists of a meal of seven courses called Velia. From what I've been told, it's a common Polish tradition that can vary by region. Variations in the number of courses, the types of food, and the symbolism that surrounds the meal. Since I've yet to meet another Polish family that does the same things we do, I'm really starting to wonder if my grandparents just made it all up. Now, most of you might be thinking, wow, a seven-course Christmas dinner sounds amazing. You may have ideas of spiraled ham, turkey, kielbasa, potato dumplings, maybe even fish. However, you'd be sorely disappointed if you joined us for dinner. The seven courses consist of the following: a white borscht made of vinegar, flour, and some funky mushrooms, plain white rice with milk, carrots and peas, lima beans, brown potatoes, pierogies, and prunes, all served and eaten separately. You'd be hard-pressed to find one of us that enjoys the entire meal. And the ending of it is far from the gluttonous, nap-inducing meal of Thanksgiving. When my grandpa was alive, he presided over the meal, and everyone took part in the tradition because that was what we did. He had a rule that you must eat a little bit of everything, no matter how you felt about it. So my single unchewed lima bean was always a qualifier. The whole thing was awesome, and it had a hint of magic. You may not have liked everything that was served, but you went along with the tradition and ate it without commentary. Ever since my grandpa passed away 18 years ago, the aura of the tradition has changed drastically. Now the largest compliment accompanying this dinner is complaints about the food. It seems to have become acceptable and customary to complain. For me personally, it sort of feels like an insult to the tradition. It's weighed heavily on me that it's been a really long time since I looked forward to the meal with anticipation. And so I tell this story knowing that we all deal with our own weights this season, no matter how minor they may be. Maybe it's the perceived violation of a tradition. Maybe it's not being accepted. Maybe it's all the family drama. Maybe it's feeling alone. Whatever it is, it's this weight that can severely diminish the anticipation of holiday celebrations. So what's the solution? There's a saying that if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change the way you think about it. For me, since I can't really change the parameters of our Polish Christmas Eve tradition, I've started to consider, what if I become more involved in the actual creation of the meal? Instead of merely being a participant and showing up for dinner, what if I share my interest in cooking and help make the borscht more flavorful and the dreaded lima beans just a little bit more palatable? Could this positive action of drawing closer to the tradition possibly transform my heavy sense of dread about Velia into eager anticipation? In the spirit of the season, I hope that we can all find a way to lighten the heavy burdens that we bear. What if, instead of putting our energy and focus into the negative elements, we try to turn inward and ask ourselves, what can I bring to the table?
People are stressed out enough on ordinary days. I don't know why or how it got to be this way, but I do know that many of us struggle with the temptation or in the instance of some employers, the requirement to overschedule our lives. I know I'm among many who have to pay attention in order to balance all of my doing with just being. It can be challenging enough to find balance on an ordinary day. Add the weight of expectation that these holidays bring, and the challenges become even greater. As the parent of an infant and toddler, I'm very mindful that I'm in the process of creating those expectations. Those expectations have been created in me by family and by culture, and now I am in the process of creating them for another. My spouse and I have reached accord on several items. For example, we know that Santa will come to our house, but we don't yet know if Santa wraps gifts or leaves them unwrapped. We're creating expectations. And I know that expectations don't just come from families. So as another case in point, I was thinking, you know, my little two-year-old, maybe we wouldn't introduce him to Santa this year and just sort of let it be a background awareness emerging. I was still making that decision when I found out that daycare made the introduction for me. The culture has tremendous influence, even upon precious little two-year-olds. It's enough to make me want to create a bubble so I can be in charge of the messaging for just a little bit longer. And that impulse to create a bubble, which is strong, sits right next to my desire to expose him to the joy. And so we went downtown last night to the Festival of Lights. I'm full of contradictions, and I'm just one person. The culture exerts an expectation that we'll celebrate Christmas, or if not Christmas, some other holiday of comparable significance this month. It isn't true, of course. You likely know that Hanukkah is actually a minor holiday in the Jewish year. The prominence of Hanukkah in the United States bears a distinct relationship to the force of Christmas in the United States. So Karen began telling the story of Herschel and the Hanukkah goblins today, in part in response to that cultural reality. And we'll look at more closely the central meanings of Hanukkah and the wisdom that it can offer us about expectations and miracles next Sunday after we hear the rest of the story. Today, I want to focus on another tradition, Advent. Advent is a season, it's unto itself in the Christian calendar. It begins the first Sunday after Thanksgiving and extends all the way up until Christmas. It's a time of expectant waiting and preparation. The word preparation may conjure in your mind immediately your very long to-do list. Hang the lights, get the tree, buy the presents, write the cards, prepare the packages, go to the post office, make the cookies, go to the Christmas concert rehearsal, go to the Christmas concert, plan the party, shop for the party, cook for the party, clean for the party, host the party, clean up after the party, get ready for the family, and the list goes on and on. So many preparations. It's no wonder people get stressed out before Christmas, or anxious, or lonely, or sad, if there's been some kind of trouble or loss in your life. The burden, the weight of all of the expectations can be too much to bear. The practice of Advent is one way of finding a stillness in the midst of it all that can help us keep our balance in this hectic holiday season.
The Iona Community is a Christian ecumenical community in Scotland, working for peace and social justice, rebuilding of community, and renewal of worship. This is their poem for Advent. When the world was dark. When the world was dark and the city was quiet, you came. You crept in beside us and no one knew. Only a few who dared to believe that God might do something different. Will you do the same this Christmas, O love? Will you come into the darkness of today's world? Not the friendly darkness, as when sleep rescues us from tiredness, but the fearful darkness, in which people have stopped believing that war will end, or that food will come, or that a government will change, or that the church cares. Will you come into that darkness and do something different to save your people from death and despair? Will you come into the quietness of the city? Not the friendly quietness as when lovers hold hands, but the fearful silence when the phone has not rung, when the letter has not come, when the voice no longer speaks and the doctor's face says it all. Will you come into that darkness and do something different, not to distract, but to embrace your people? And will you come into the dark corners and the quiet places of our lives? We ask this not because we are guilt-ridden or want to be, but because the fullness of our lives longs for and depends on us being as open and vulnerable to you as you were when you came to us, wearing no more than diapers and trusting human hands to hold their maker. Will you come into our lives if we open them to you and do something different? When the world was dark and the city was quiet, you came. You crept in beside us. Do the same this Christmas, love. Do the same. Amen.
In the Christian liturgical year, Advent is a time of preparation. It's a time to prepare for God's incarnation in the world. Those who affirm the divinity of Jesus see Advent as a time for getting ready for God to do a radically new thing. On Christmas, God is born in the life of a vulnerable baby, utterly dependent. Among a simple people, God lives. At the hands of imperial authorities, God suffers and dies. And then on Easter, God is resurrected. Every year, from Advent to Easter, the Christian calendar marks the time for the telling of the sacred story. Around the world, many millions of people center their lives on the meanings they find in that story. Brian Zand is a pastor of a non-denominational Christian church in Missouri, and he explains that Advent extends an annual invitation to look forward to the saving promise of that story. It's a time for preparing for renewal. And Advent provides an opportunity, he says, for people to make the space in themselves to learn how to hope again. Christian Unitarian Universalists may embrace most, if not all, of this traditional understanding of the meaning of Advent. Those with other theological orientations amongst us may find it a little bit harder to accept. But I think that with a little translating, Advent has something to offer Unitarian Universalists of many theological orientations. Both of our traditions, Unitarianism and Universalism, are rooted in unorthodox expressions of Christianity. Unitarians got their name from their disavowal of the divinity of Jesus and their affirmation of the unity of God. Universalists got their name for their faith in God's eternal and abiding love. So by our history, we have an authentic claim on the stories and the traditions. And we have the permission, if not the encouragement, to interpret that story through our own best lights. So we keep Christmas and we celebrate Easter. And I want to encourage us to observe Advent too. If we aren't sure what that might mean, we can begin with reflecting on the meanings of the Christmas story. In recent generations, Unitarian Universalists have been fond of saying, after Sophia Lyon Foss, the great religious educator of the middle of the 20th century, that each night a child is born is a holy night. For many agnostic and atheist Unitarian Universalists, the story of Jesus' humble birth is a reminder that each and every life is sacred. Each night a child is born is a holy night, we say. And one of my mentors says often, when leading baby dedications, that each child born is another redeemer. That sounds like such lofty language, but to redeem simply means to make something better. So to say that every child is born another redeemer is a way of saying that every life is a blessing. It's a way of saying that every single person has the capacity to be a blessing upon our world. Every new life is a reason for hope, no matter how humble the circumstances of that birth. In its most simple and humanistic terms, Christmas is a story of hope. Thus, in its most simple and humanistic terms, Advent is a time to prepare ourselves for the renewal of hope. It's a time to wait, a time to set aside the crush of expectations and slow down. It's a time to become quiet and attentive, a time for opening ourselves up to the promise of hope once again. And I know a lot of people could use a little more hope right now. If you, like me, have been alternately heartsick and disgusted and outraged over the epidemic of gun violence in our country, then keeping Advent might be just the spiritual prescription you need right now. I've read several articles this week by people promising that it's not going to change, that this tragedy, the last tragedy, the next tragedy isn't going to change the way we deal with guns in this country, that meaningful gun change is just politically not possible right now. And maybe they're right. That might be true. But even if it is, I think we just can't resign ourselves to hopelessness. So the postcards that I wrote, they might not make any difference to the people who receive them, but they make a difference to me because they tell me that I am not going to resign myself to hopelessness. I'm not going to resign myself to helplessness. I'm going to keep on praying and singing and working and hoping for change. And if we are to be sustained over the long haul in this effort or in any other, if we're to avoid succumbing to cynicism and bitterness and despair, we have to have hope that our efforts will make a difference. Maybe not now or tomorrow, and maybe we can't see just exactly how or when, but we have to hold on to hope that it matters how we live. Hope will feed our moral imaginations, and hope will help us keep on striving to give shape, life, breath to our moral imagination. The moral imagination and its pursuit are manifestations of hope. So I'm talking about gun violence, but you can substitute any other trouble that breaks your heart. Whatever it is, hope shines a light by which we can see a new way and strengthens the courage we need to move toward that new way. No matter how broken or desolate things seem, it's possible to choose hope. I know it can be difficult. It can be a difficult choice. Sometimes hope is hard to find. When that happens, you might have to find someone else to hold on to hope for you for a little while. You might need to take the time to prepare a place in your heart for the renewal of hope. And it can take time to do that, especially when suffering is close upon us. But Advent is the time. Advent is an invitation to make the time to prepare. The capacity to bear the light in unbearable times is born of hope. The capacity to endure the unendurable is born of hope. The capacity to witness for the persistence of light is born of hope. The will to work for the dream of the world we wish to inhabit is born of hope. Hope is a choice we can make, and hope is also a gift we are given. It comes not simply as a result of our effort, though it's important for us to cultivate our efforts. It also comes without our attention or our participation. Hope will be born again and again and again and again because each life is born another Redeemer. Hope will be born again on Christmas and in a million little ways before Christmas and in a million little ways after Christmas. So take some time this week to stop and simply be. Sit in the dark with the lights of a tree or a candle to soften your gaze and lift your spirit, and let yourself notice what really matters. Prepare yourself to praise every single blessed instance of hope born again. Amen.
Breezes bless you, lift your spirit, make them fly. May the southern sun shine on you, warm your heart and help you try. May the western waters cleanse you, washing over all you feel. Northern earth be yours to stand in, ground you so you know what's real. Over all be strength and beauty, food and friends and music fine, work your love and pleasant duty, love to make your spirit shine. All of these I wish upon you, multiply.
There are people, moments, bearers of the light. Go look for them and sing songs of praise. Amen.